Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Welcome back to the show. I'm coming at you from lovely Minneapolis, Minnesota. Katie and I have just had an amazing weekend of visiting many friends and family. It's been a really fun time here. It's been about a year since we've been to Minnesota, and it's always great to come back. We've only been in the States for about 2 weeks now, but it feels like much longer. We've got about 1 month to go before our epic journey begins. We're just starting to plan our Iceland segment of the trip, figuring out where we can go hiking. And today I'm going to give you the last interview I did in Beijing, China. This one was with Patty Robertson. A couple days before we moved out of the country, Patty and I took off for a bike trip to, well, you'll hear all about it, but to some awesome pagodas. A couple hours by bicycle from central Beijing, but it feels like another world. And this ended up being one of my favorite little getaway locations. It's officially closed, but as you'll hear, that is not an issue when you are in China and you realize that you don't always have to follow the rules. So, without any further ado, let's get right into my talk with Patty Robertson. Only one more day left in China. Katie and I are heading back home the day after tomorrow. Now, I don't think you'll get to hear this till we've been back home for a couple weeks, but I'm here with Patty, and we've done one podcast before.
Yep.
So now we're going to do another one, and this one's going to be themed on this bike trip that we just did. Basically, Katie already took her fold-up bike out to a friend's place out in the suburbs and parked it there, and she's going to leave it there for like 4 months till we get back. We're going to do this epic journey across Russia via the Trans-Siberian Railroad and come back here and pick up our fold-up bikes and head out to Japan, to bike around Japan for a while. And I wanted to do one last trip with my fold-up bike before taking it back, and Patty suggested a while back that we go to, what's it called again?
The Iron Mountain Silver, no, so the Iron Curtain Silver Mountain.
Iron Curtain Silver Mountain, which is a heavy metal band here in Beijing, and it's also the name of this cool place about 50 kilometers north of here with these awesome old pagodas. And so we wanted to check those out.
I think the colloquial name is Silver Pagodas, but its okay. Official name, if you go by the name of the scenic park, is Iron Curtain.
It's Silver Iron Mountain. Curtain Silver Pagoda. All right, so the plan was for us to bike out there together, and then on the way back, I was going to split up from him and drop off the bike, put it away, and then we've got one more day to move out before we head home. So yesterday, we met up, and we took off from near our place. We both live in the same neighborhood, a couple of houses away from each other.
Fairly leisurely set off, 2 p.m. I mean, we didn't... wasn't really a very tough day.
Yeah. It was nice. No, it was a long day, man. But
it was,
like,
true.
But we only started our adventure kind of late.
Yeah. I mean, you had been doing a lot before that.
I mean, I was out pretty late the night before and then did... I mean, moving out of a country for good where you're kind of not coming back and a lot of your friends are not ever coming back, it means a lot of goodbyes. So we've been doing a lot of goodbye stuff. But we squeezed in a little bit of time for this trip. So we took off, and it's interesting because central Beijing is very urban, just
giant city, one of the biggest cities in the world.
Traffic lights, cars everywhere, motorbikes everywhere, just everything everywhere, going everywhere.
It's full on. We've both been here for a little while, though, so we're fairly used to it, but still,
running,
it's just...
Running red lights.
Red lights. Right. We kind of cycled side by side heading out of the city, and we got into a conversation about the law and how the law is different in China versus the United States, and probably a lot different than Great Britain even. All three probably have their own aspects. And I think what it comes down to is in the U.S., the law is, it's the law. Like, you can't bend the rules. If it's illegal, it's just illegal. And here in China, there's just so many things that are technically illegal, but just everyone breaks it and just don't hurt anybody. Just keep
which,
it here.
Which I think is similar to the UK in the sense that, like, it's the law, but it's like, you're not harming anyone. So, just let it go.
More or less. And we talked about, like, drinking laws, especially how you know, after having lived here for a long time in China, it just seems so weird to me that we have such strict laws on alcohol, such as like open intoxicants. And it's just, it's like, it's not even about the drinking. It's just, if you just have an open bottle of anything, you're sober. You haven't even had any. It's illegal. You're walking around. And yet you can be completely wasted, like not even able to walk. And as long as you don't have any alcohol actually in your hand, you're fine. As long as you're 21.
That's another thing, yeah.
Which is another big difference.
But I'm guessing none of that would matter in China.
No, I mean, I don't think China even has a drinking age for starters. Or if
they probably do, but...
It might have one.
I've never, ever seen any reference to a drinking age.
Not only have I never gotten carded here, I've never heard of anyone getting carded here. It's not a thing at all. You'd never, ever have to prove your age to get alcohol here. You could probably buy alcohol if you're 3 years old. Not that a lot of kids
I have seen that in China.
You have?
Yeah. Well, maybe it was cigarettes. It's one or the other. And they're buying it for their granddad or their mum or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Buying a bottle of Baijiu for
I've seen
family.
That in India, too, for sure. But, like, the kid that I did see in India wasn't drunk. I really do think he was probably just buying it for his parents.
Yeah.
But it's... Some countries, it's totally fine. But not the United States. What's Britain like for that kind of stuff?
Nah, you wouldn't be able to buy it if you're underage. Well, I have bought alcohol underage. But that's like, you know, when you kind of look 18 and you can get away with it.
Well, you've got an 18-year-old drinking age. Yeah. And some of our states, like Wisconsin is kind of like, yeah, he looks over 21. All right, we're cool. Like, no need to card him. But then some states, like next door in Minnesota, have much stricter rules. Like certain places, they have to card everybody. You can be 90 years old, walk into a grocery store to buy beer, like have to show your ID to prove you're 21. It just gets kind of, it gets asinine eventually.
We just discussed how horrible that kind of way of doing things is. Just following the law to the letter. And the law is the law. It's just way too.
So
it makes
strict.
it makes things tough. Like you can't just run red lights like we did, all the way up out of Beijing.
Yeah.
Great fun, and it saved us a lot of time.
Well, that said,
hopefully no one got hurt.
No, like a lot of cyclists do run red lights actually, like where I'm from. But you couldn't do it in front of a cop, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Beijing, if you're on a bicycle, you run a red light. Right in front of a cop, I don't think they're going to do anything.
You cycle the wrong way down a main road in front of a cop, they don't do anything.
Nothing.
It's great.
Which, of course, has its negative side, like you could cause accidents, but there's almost like, there's just this understanding, like if you are doing something incredibly stupid and you hurt somebody, then it's your fault and you're going to have to pay for it. Mm. You know, but if you look both ways and there's no cars coming and the light happens to be red, then you can go through a red light. No one's going to care. Mm. So there's just giant differences in how laws are interpreted in my country versus here, which was a long discussion. And that kind of
that took us all the way out of the city, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. Which maybe I'll talk about more in detail later, because I do have a lot more thoughts behind that. But this is mainly a discussion about the bike trip.
Mm.
So let's see, we got up to around the fifth ring, which is kind of the edge of the core city. For people who don't know, like, Beijing's kind of designed like a dartboard almost, or like with concentric circles, and the first ring is the Forbidden City, which is where the emperor used to live. And the second ring is where the old city used to end. There used to be walls around the city. And I live just inside the second ring. And now the city has just expanded way far outward. And so now there's six rings, but the main part of the city ends after the fifth ring. Which, how far is that from Tiananmen Square? Maybe like 15 km?
A bit further.
20 maybe?
Maybe between 15 and 20, yeah.
So imagine a circle that's radius of 20 kilometers. What's that, 12 miles? It's really not that far. And that there's over 20 million people in that area. It's just crazy when you think about it, how many people are packed in there. And then once we got outside the city, we decided, okay, first time for a water break, because it was very hot. So we stopped, and first thing I noticed was a sign that said two characters. I didn't know the second character, Chinese characters. The first character I recognized was dog. And I was like, oh, they're selling dogs, huh? Mm. And like immediately that's what I thought of. Is that what you thought of?
Same as me, yeah. I saw that. Well, you asked me, you were like, what's that character? And I was like, dog something. And I was like, yeah.
It must be dog meat.
Oh, God, we're out of the city. You know, it must be. We're out in the sticks now.
Yeah.
It must be, yeah.
But then we looked up the second character. It's just a word for food.
So it's dog food.
Yeah. So they were actually selling dog food.
But I think that was interesting, as it shows that we've lived in China for 2 to 3 years, but we still have these stereotypes and this bias. Despite knowing that nobody in Beijing eats dogs.
Right.
And like everyone has dogs and they're like the loved pet of the family. But we still had this like thing in the back of our minds being like, all the Chinese eat dogs, it must be dog meat, you know.
I know, it kind of sucks. It's like, you know, you come somewhere to kind of shed your prejudices and like overcome it, or just learn about the culture. And if something's not true, then it should be out of your mind. It's like, it's just not, people don't eat dog here. But that was still my first thought.
In Beijing at least, yeah.
Yeah, in the south they do some. I have actually seen them for sale in the south, but only like in a little village, not even any big cities. Anyway, that was pretty interesting. What was the other? We stopped at this other shop for just water, and it happened to be mostly a cigarette shop, and there were three people working there, and they must get like one customer every 20 minutes. And they have three employees, and I don't know. That kind of thing's just funny. The underemployment. It's just,
well, they probably just wanted to hang out, you know.
It was
like, what are you doing
girls
this Saturday? Oh, let's go, let's all go hang out in the shop, you know.
I know.
Play on their phones.
I guess it's a thing to do. Make a little bit of money anyway.
Yeah.
So we had some drinks and then headed out. I kind of wrote down like some basics of what we're going to talk about. But the big thing that happened next is just this transition from being in the city to being in the countryside, the rural setting. And it's a bit abrupt after the fifth ring, where suddenly there's no more skyscrapers, and you start to see like farm fields, but then you'll see like popping up here and there like 15 different buildings in a row that are exactly the same. They're each like 20 stories tall, these developments. So the city kind of peters out, then it comes back, then it peters out, then it comes back. And then once you get to the sixth ring, then it's like, okay, now you're outside of even the suburbs.
Really out in the sticks, yeah.
Yeah, way out there. And then there's this immediate transition then with the people. Like, we were talking about their accents.
They suddenly turn much, much, much more Beijing. Which sounds strange because you're outside of the city. But I guess it's because the inner city now is made up of a majority of Waidiren, people who have come in to live and work in Beijing. So they're not actually locals. Whereas the people out in those places are families who have lived there for, you know, for generations. So their accent is pretty thick. Pirates all around, I think, yeah.
Yeah, if there's one word you could use to describe a Beijing accent, it's pirate. It's like, rawr, rawr, rawr. Yeah, a lot of that. And Beijing just has people from all over China. And so that's interesting. It's not as thick of an accent. But then we wanted to get some fruit. And what's in season now? Cherries are in season?
Peaches and nectarines and stuff, yeah. Watermelons seem to be in season.
Oh, watermelons
everywhere.
Lots
of watermelons. But that, we thought that was a little bit heavy to be taking on our bikes.
That's right. Yeah, unless we wanted to eat the whole thing right there. So our kind of goal was to get some cherries, and we talked to a couple people. And
oh, the cherry guys were playing chess. They were having fun playing chess.
Oh, that's right. They were playing some aggressive Chinese chess, like really slapping the tiles down, like trying to intimidate each other.
I noticed that in most kind of board games, with cards as well, they'll always slap them down on the table.
Yeah.
It's kind of more about the theatrical effect than it is the actual what you play.
Right.
I think it is, it's to intimidate, or it's to kind of show confidence and stuff.
Yeah, even Mahjong.
It's great fun. Yeah. It's all about the noise. It's not just a game of, you know, logic and thought. It's also a game of noise.
Oh, that's part of it.
Yeah.
All part of the game. And then we picked up some nectarines, were they?
Yeah.
I guess so. And Patty ate a couple of them for free.
Well, like, ate one. It was really tasty, so we bought some. And then we went to the next stall. And there was something else that I'd never seen before, you know. I was like, whoa, what are these? And she was like, try one. I was like, we've just bought some nectarines. We don't want any. So she was like, try one, go for it. So I said, okay, no shame. This is what's great about buying fruit in China. They want you to try it because they obviously want you to think, oh, that's tasty, and then buy some. But I just ate the whole thing and then walked off. She didn't have any problems with that.
Right, it's really not an issue here at all that you just ate someone's fruit and then, like, just took off.
But, I mean, that is how the UK used to be. I don't know why it stopped. I guess because supermarkets turned up and then they can't have everyone in the supermarket eating the fruit. But, right. I mean, it's a great form of sales, right? It's a great sales technique.
Oh, sure. Try one.
Try
first
one.
First one's
and then,
free.
And then you like it.
Yeah.
Or you feel guilty. And
works
then
for heroin. Well, so
not that Chinese nectarines are equivalent to heroin.
Well, yeah, the cherries might be. They're super good. And we should emphasize, these are not supermarkets. These are just like street stalls. The farmers pick
these. Well,
they're
not even stalls. They're just,
oh, some guy with a chair, basically.
Yeah. He just put a table out on the, no, it's the back of their three-wheelers that they just fold down the side. They've just picked in the morning. They fold down this. They drive into town, or I don't know if you could call that little village a town. Probably not.
Yeah.
And then just pull up on the side of the road and shout 2 kilos for 10 kuai, 2 kilos for 10 kuai at everyone who passes. It's great fun.
And that's their method. And that's well, you're buying directly from the people who picked it, so that's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where the road kind of started turning up. Like, Beijing is really flat, the city is. But all around Beijing, except for the south, all three other sides, there are mountains.
Mm.
So we started heading uphill, up into the mountains. It immediately got cooler, that was one thing.
Yeah, noticeably, like 3-4 degrees cooler. Because, I mean, what it was 3-4 p.m. at that point, and it was still pretty hot. We had staved off the rain. But, yeah.
Oh, that's right. It had been raining the last couple of days, which was actually nice because it cleared out all the pollution and dropped the temperature a bit, though it was still quite hot.
And all the people. We'll talk about that in
a
while, yeah.
But then the next thing that we started seeing were the trains.
Oh, yeah.
We pulled up to, or as we were biking anyway, we saw this train going by. It's just really interesting because they're so long, just hundreds of cars. Just chugging along really slow toward Beijing. And then another train came the other direction, much, much faster.
We were like, what, two tracks? Wow, this must be a busy railway line. And
sure.
Yeah, going much, much, much quicker out of the city.
They had a completely different sound to them, to the way the clickety-clack went. And these are not passenger trains, they're cargo. So we were just thinking, oh, there's all this stuff getting shipped into the city.
We were like, it's great, they're using trains for all their transportation, which is
right.
It's really good. China is impressive with the amount of freight they transport by rail.
It must be. I mean, when you think about any giant city, like, think about all the logistics of just getting food in, just getting supplies into the city. It's just crazy, just mind-boggling how does that even work? Like, so much stuff has to come in, and then all the trash that has to come out, and you think about waste management, it's just, I can't even begin to think about how they would plan for such a huge city and how this is even possible, but yeah, it all is, so it's good to live in the 21st century. but then we kept going up and
train after train. Going both ways. It was literally probably 3-4 minutes between trains that were like 1 to 2 kilometers long. Right. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much nonstop. And then we went over this bridge where the train was going under us. So we got a good look at the cars from above, and they're all filled with coal. Just nothing but coal.
Full to the brim, yeah.
Yeah, car after car after car, just filled with, I don't even know how much would each car would even hold. But I was trying to think of that, like, well, you can burn one lump of coal, and that'll keep you toasty warm for an hour or two. How much coal would you need in your entire life to, if you wanted heat? And it's probably several human beings' lifetimes worth of coal on each car.
Mm.
And there's hundreds of cars on these trains. And the ones going, of course, going into the city, all packed with coal. And the ones coming out were just empty.
Completely empty. Traveling, yeah, as you said, twice as fast because they were so empty.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah, it was just like, wow, because China's claiming, or at least Beijing is claiming to be going coal-free, but where is all this coal going?
Yeah.
Oh, and where's it coming from? That's another question, yeah.
Right, like it's like a whole mountain top of coal on each of these trains.
In a Mongolia somewhere, my guess is.
Probably.
Yeah.
And so sure, so sometime in the next 20 years, maybe they will be coal-free, but for now, not quite there yet. Then we kept going up, and a couple of downhill sections, but mostly uphill, and the villages got smaller and more remote. And finally, we reached our destination, this little village called Humansun.
Humansun.
Like Lake Gate Village, I guess you could translate
gateway
it as.
Gateway to the lake.
Oh, Gateway to the Lake Village. And there was no lake, and we're not really sure why it's called that. Maybe there used to be a lake there. Who knows?
There was a small recreational pond at the bottom for fishing.
All right.
Artificial. Yeah. It could have been in reference to that. No,
yeah,
I don't think
lake.
So.
The little kiddie pool is the lake. So now it was time to like look for somewhere to stay for the night. We wanted to get a like kind of an idea of what this pagoda park was going to look like, because we were planning to visit it the next day, which was this morning.
We'd found out it was closed. I had called them up in the morning because I was worried it would be closed because of the rain. I said, hey, you guys open today? They said, no. I said, oh, how about tomorrow? They said, no. It's like, oh, okay, why is that? We've been closed since 2014. I was like, okay, but you're still answering the phone. All right, that's fair enough. But then I was like, damn it, we're not going to get in. But one thing that confused me was like, on some Chinese websites, this place had been getting 5-star reviews like for the past 3 years since it's been closed. And I was like, wait a minute, people are still going, but it's closed. And I looked through the comments and people just claim that, yeah, you can just get in. So anyway.
So this kind of goes back to where the rules aren't really black and white here. Like in the U.S., if they closed a park, it would just be closed. You don't get in. And if you try to get in, you're trespassing. And if anyone saw you in it, they'd immediately call the cops and that'd be the end of it. But here, like closed, means probably closed. And so we figured, we'll still get in. We'll figure out some way in.
So we went to scout it out and see how we might get in the next day, you know, which route we might take or whatever. We got up to the main gate and we saw that. First of all, we saw the sign saying, this park is now closed for some reason.
The English translation said
this. This is great.
For some reason, it's closed.
Yeah. And okay. Then, but if you do happen to enter the park, you enter at your own risk. Kind of contradicts the first sentence, but...
Right.
But it's, yeah, it's...
it's China. So there was a gate that was down. There were like 3 guys there manning the gate for this park that's closed. And you would think they're just not allowed to let this gate up. So we just kind of walked around it, parked our bikes, walked around and said, hey, we're just going to take a photo quick. And the guy just started yelling, like, no, you can't go in. You can't go in. But he didn't chase after us or anything. He just kind of said,
we just said, oh, we're just going to take a photo. We'll just go there. He's like, you can't go in.
Yeah, we'll be right back. That's okay. Yeah. And it's totally fine. And then he just kind of laughed it off. And so we went in, took a couple pictures. We didn't see the pagodas yet. We didn't have our bikes because we left them at the gate. We're like, we better get back to the bikes. Mm-hmm. But we'll find a path that goes around this gate the next day, and we'll figure something out. So
basically, our logic was that as long as we avoid these guards, we'll be fine. Like, we need to stay away from these guards. Right. That's the main thing.
Yeah. So and once we get in, it shouldn't be a problem. All right. So then we wanted to find a place to sleep for the night. Checked one place. They're kind of expensive. So checked another place, and their offer for the place was 100 kwai. But that included breakfast and dinner.
And bed. Yeah.
And a place to sleep. So,
a very large bed as well.
Right, and these were these traditional Chinese kong beds, so they're really long beds, and I think they heat them with coal traditionally.
Traditionally, they would have a fire at one end, and then the smoke would flow all the way under the beds and out the other side of the building. And it's the smoke or the hot air from the fire that would warm
the
bed.
Oh, interesting.
And they would put down like a lot of mattresses on the top of this because it's just concrete or I guess stone originally. You put down a load of not mattresses but like thin.
Well, what the Chinese might call mattresses, I might call it like plywood.
the thin cloth. Duvet type things, and because they're so well insulating, they keep that heat in, and even in the middle of the winter, I've slept in these things in the winter, it's freezing outside, but you peel off the top layer and you get in and it's toasty and warm because they just keep the heat in so well.
I guess stones do hold heat really well. There's this camping technique where you put stones into a fire when you're sitting around the campfire, and then you take them out.
And you put them in your sleeping bag, right?
Well, you have to be really careful with this, but you can bring them to bed with you. And they stay warm really well. Anyway, though, there's three of these giant rooms. Each room probably sleeps like 10 people, maybe 15, if you really pack them in. And we were the only guests, so we each took one of these giant rooms.
To ourselves,
To ourselves.
And giant beds, they were like...
Oh, yeah.
8 meter long beds.
Right. Well, I'm almost 8 meters tall.
So you could have slept sideways on the bed, yeah? Just about fit.
My feet were not quite hanging off the end. And, just to ourselves. And it was 100, they wanted 100 kwai. Patty talked them down to 90. Which is like...
I'm sounding more and more like a stingy guy who's just trying to squeeze these... Yeah. Hardworking Chinese souls out of money. But I mean, for me, it's just natural now because it's just what everyone does in China. Yeah. It's just completely normal to, someone will give you a price and you just say, give me 10 kwai off. It's not like the 100 was crazy expensive, but it's just kind of a natural reflex for me now. I don't know.
Sure, like everything's negotiable here.
Yeah.
And I don't do it too much when, like with something like that where it's already a very reasonable price, I usually don't go down any further.
Well, it was 40 for the bed, 10 for breakfast, and then 50 for dinner. 50 for dinner was a little bit pricey.
That was a little steep.
And she knew it, so I said 40 for dinner, and she said okay.
When you put it like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not... I don't think she... Like, people don't take it as you're being stingy just because you're bargaining here.
No.
I think they might actually respect you more because you...
And if they know that you know the actual price, they will agree to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because again, she's going to want to try and make a little bit more money, right?
Right.
So she's going to put the price up, and I'm going to want to try and save a bit of money, so I'm going to try and butter down. It's just kind of the way things work. There's no fixed price. It's if someone can make an extra 10 kwai, they will try.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is fair enough. If you're, I mean, for foreigners coming in and traveling, it's very tough because you're not used to that. But if you've lived here or you are Chinese, I mean, you know to play by the rules.
That's right. So. And the first place that we checked out, I said it was a little expensive. They wouldn't come down at all in price. They wanted 150 kwai for a room. So it would have been 75 each just just for the bed, not for food. Mm. And we paid 40 each, and they wouldn't budge at all, so we just didn't stay there. I mean, yeah. They lost all that money. But that's just how it goes, I guess.
That's the way it works, yeah. But the reason we managed to get our own bed and our own room was because the lady at the guest house told us that they'd just had a cancellation of 20 people because of this huge rain that was supposed to be coming in. So I think there was a big busload of people who were going to be staying there, but because of the announcement that there was going to be heavy rains and floods. Did you hear about the report that it was going to be the biggest storm in 6 years? And the last time there was a storm this big 6 years ago, people got washed into sewers and things like that. But I mean, in reality, it was fine. There was no rain yesterday or today.
Right.
So we were just very lucky. It meant there were no people there and we got the place to ourselves.
That's right. They did really talk up this storm. And it did rain pretty hard for
a whole day. All of Friday. Yeah.
But actually, very late, like 2 o'clock in the morning maybe, Katie and I were walking home. And there wasn't really any flooding, which is good. I mean, we've seen the videos of like how bad the flooding can get in Beijing because the drainage system is just not good. But it was fine. So I think the storm just wasn't as bad as they had predicted.
Yeah.
But that's just another kind of theme of being here in China. Like when it, especially in the north or here in Beijing where it doesn't rain much, when it rains, just people scatter.
Yeah.
If it's just drizzling a tiny bit, everybody's got their umbrellas out and people will refuse to go anywhere. And
taxis suddenly become non-existent because they're all full. And Didi or Ubers go like up 5 times in price because everybody wants one. And
yeah, it's impossible to get a taxi when it's raining here. Just forget it. It's especially just to stand out on the street and hail one. There just aren't enough of them.
I think this trend of like being scared by the rain and that's why there was no one there is another recurring thing in China, in that people they're kind of afraid of these natural disasters and stuff. A few days ago there was a landslide up in I think northeast of Beijing, and after that so many of my Chinese friends were like, don't go hiking, don't go cycling, don't do anything, stay at home, because you're going to die. And it's kind of, there is this theme of worrying, whereas, I don't know, I think we're both you and I, Dan, are fairly kind of carefree, worry-free. Yeah. And we're just like, screw it, let's just go.
Right, maybe I should worry more.
Maybe we should, yeah.
I mean, I'm just kind of used to the way things are at home with infrastructure, where things don't tend to fall down in a rainstorm. Like, things tend to just keep going on. And even if we have a lot of snow where I'm from, it's just, whatever. It's just another day.
Mm.
So I'm used to things just working. Although, that being said, we've had incidents like this gigantic bridge crossing the Mississippi River just collapsed. Like, I mean, this is a while ago, but all the cars just fell like 100 feet into the river and a bunch of people died. And just recently, part of the Pacific Coast Highway in California, where your brother is now, pretty close to where he is,
yeah,
just
he's over there.
Fell right into the ocean. The whole highway is just gone, washed
out. I'll let him know not to go there.
Well, I don't know exactly where. It's just one little part of it, but that just blocks the whole road. It just doesn't exist anymore. And I think some of those communities are pretty isolated. Like, that's the only road in. And it just doesn't exist now, so I'm not sure what they're going to do. So we have these problems too, but maybe we just deal with them.
We don't seem to worry as much.
Not as much, not from some rain anyway. But this village was fairly empty of tourists, so that worked to our advantage.
There were just a few old people, like an old grandpa, planting his runner beans, planting the wigwams to keep them up. We tried talking to him, but I don't know. We think he was deaf, or perhaps he. Yeah, hard of hearing, or perhaps he thought we were speaking a language he couldn't understand. Who knows?
That sometimes happens here. If you just are, if you look foreign, people assume you cannot speak Chinese. And Patty's Chinese is excellent, actually. It's like, you can really speak well. So it's almost like if you put a screen between you and the person you're talking to, and they just don't see you, they can understand you a lot better.
Yeah.
Some people. This isn't everybody, but
I mean, in their minds, it's just like incomprehensible that they will be able to understand a foreigner. So their brain just says, I don't know what you're saying. Even if, you, like, I've been on occasions where I've said, I'm speaking Chinese to you right now. Can you understand Chinese? And they just look at me like, no, English, no. And
it's they assume you're speaking English.
Yeah, they assume you're speaking English.
Huh. And it's not even because your Chinese is bad. Like, you can be, like, I've heard of a native Chinese speaker who just, he's white, but he grew up in China, speaks at a native level. He still has these kind of problems. Again, it's probably, I don't know, 5% of people who have this kind of mental blockage, but every now and then you run into that.
Yeah.
Most people at least will throw you a bone and try to understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went up to this pagoda to watch the sunset.
Hmm.
A beautiful sunset. There were people meditating.
It was nice, yeah.
At this pagoda, and just kind of took it all in. It was interesting for me just to see all these mountains, these green mountains surrounding us. Where I'll put up some pictures of this place on the show notes for this podcast. But then just understanding that 50 kilometers away is the very center of Beijing, where 20 million people live. And here's this little village, just totally peaceful.
Completely, beautifully backward. And, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, then we came back down to the hotel, had dinner. Only interesting thing to note here, I think, is that we wanted to sit outside, and there happened to be a rabbit in a cage right next to where we were eating. And the owner of the hotel proudly said, like, yeah, he's a wild rabbit, and we're going to keep feeding him until he gets bigger, and then we're going to eat him. And we had to kind of sit there watching this rabbit trying to escape from his cage, like gnawing at the bars while we were eating.
It was a little bit hard to watch, but yeah. Literally just been caught and was clearly not used to being in a cage.
Yeah, and people here they have a different attitude toward animals. They just don't see them as these beings that can feel pain or be stressed or whatever. They're just food.
He was there with his friend. They were admiring it and going, oh, that looks nice. That'll be a good supper one day. Huh? Where did you catch it? You know, just chatting about it whilst it was there trying to claw its way out of this cage. Yeah.
Right. So then we went to bed early after dinner. It's close to the solstice here, so the days are quite long. Nights are not so long, so it's almost like as soon as it gets dark now, it's bedtime. Got up early. We had breakfast at the hotel again, and we had traditional Chinese breakfast, which is manto.
Northern Chinese breakfast.
Oh, northern Chinese breakfast. Manto.
Which I'm a fan of, but you're not.
Yeah. It's basically just plain bread, like a roll.
Just white bread.
Yeah, it doesn't really taste like anything. I always create like mnemonic devices to learn how to say words. And so obviously manto is like man's toe, so it tastes like a man's toe,
but it doesn't. It's very bland.
Yeah. Well, how do you know what a man's toe tastes like?
I've tried my own, thank you very much.
Yeah, put your foot in your mouth.
Can you do that?
I can do it.
Okay.
Yeah, no problem.
Someone as tall as you can even do that.
Yeah. It doesn't work well for a podcast, but yeah, I'll show you afterwards.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though. You said it's very bland and boring, which is why you need this thing that accompanied the manto this morning, which you really aren't a fan of. It was this fermented tofu, which was red. She's the owner of the guest house. She was telling me that it was because they use some kind of vinegar or something to ferment the manto. And it's basically, they put two squares on a plate. Two kind of dice-sized squares of this stuff. And we were like, huh, what's this? Is this the leftover braised pork from yesterday? Just two pieces? Like, could they not have done better? But it turns out it's this really, really salty, strong-flavored tofu, which if you take kind of a fingernail amount, fingernails worth of this stuff, put it in a manto, it's perfect.
It's, yeah, so I kind of compared it to Vegemite, which I also am not a fan of. And I'm glad you asked about that, because she said tofu, and it's just like a bite size. I normally would have just scooped up that whole thing and put it in my mouth. I scooped up about 1% of it and went, oh god, it's awful. Such a strong flavor. It's just overpowering.
It was really, really strong and salty. Ugh. But I don't know, it was Moorish, or rather, as you would say,
you want more of it?
You want more of it.
Moorish.
Sorry, I had to teach Dan some British English earlier today.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I got through 3 or 4 mantos just by putting that on top. You hardly need to use any. That's a very, very traditional, common Chinese meal, especially in the rural areas. I was up on the Great Wall at Jianghou about a month ago, and they're currently renovating it, and the guys were having lunch, and they just had mantou with xiancai, with salty cabbage. And it's really, really salty, and the mantou is really, really bland. And they just put the two together, and it's a delicacy.
Call it good, huh?
Oh, it was good. Huh. You don't look so convinced.
I'll take your word for it. We also had our morning cup of joe, or rather joe.
Joe,
which is like a corn soup, or a porridge, I guess, from corn, which is, actually, that tastes good. All right, so then we, okay.
This is when the guy came back out to play with the rabbit, right?
Oh, that's I almost forgot about that.
And, I mean, the rabbit was there quietly. Clearly, it had calmed down after a stressful night, and it was like, okay, there's nothing I can do. It was in there. And then the guy comes along with his Buddhist bracelet with kind of Buddhist beads on it, and just starts whacking the cage with it and just laughing, and he's just kind of smacking the cage with the rabbit inside, clearly aggravating it and just kind of idling away time. Then he puts his finger in, and the rabbit bites his finger, and he starts laughing. He's like, ha, 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 the rabbit bit my finger. And it's like, yes.
Like, and you're surprised. Okay. And he just thought it was the funniest thing.
Yeah.
The rabbit bit my finger. I have rabies.
just does it, the logic that it's a living animal and that it's like, has thoughts and stuff, I think just didn't pass on. It's like, oh, I'm hitting it with some beads. I thought it was quite funny that they were Buddhist beads, but
yeah, quite ironic, yeah.
But yeah, and then he started doing it again, and it clearly got a little bit scared and pissed itself.
Right.
And then he just kind of took the cage away and just put it in a garden and left it and walked off.
Oh, so it could look like at the carrots that it can never have.
Yeah.
Wow, but it's just, I mean, we're laughing, and I think the first time I saw animal abuse in China, I was very mad. I saw this guy kind of playing with a snake like that at Jianghou, actually. Just taking a stick and just, like, poking it. And it's just this harmless little snake. And just like, ha, 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 look at this. I can poke it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it can't get away. I'm like, don't do that. Like, I kind of yelled at him. Like,
it's like, it's an animal. Do you want me to poke you?
Exactly. Right, yeah. Exactly. But it's just so common here that you almost have to just laugh it off, or you'll just drive yourself crazy.
It is going to change, though. You look at younger people now, and they're much more aware and considerate.
Yeah, absolutely. We already talked about dogs. Like, dogs are totally pets now, and, like, people are, they dote all this attention on their dogs, like, more than Americans, God, even.
Yeah. I mean, pink hairdos and shoes and just everything.
Yeah. It's over the top, actually. So, I do agree.
We got asked if we wanted to buy a dog today, this morning.
Oh, I forgot about that. We were just having this drink of water outside of the shop, and this lady just walked up to us with a little dog on a leash. And, like, we had our bicycles, and she's just like, hey, it's for sale. You want to buy it? I'm like, no, we don't want to buy a dog.
My bumai.
Yeah, just, my
bumai. Buy, no buy?
Yeah. And
she was selling it for 1,000 kwai.
Which is a lot of money, actually.
For a very small dog.
Right, like, that's way too much.
Yeah.
And we also don't want it. And we're also on bicycles.
She carried on, and then she asked some other cyclists.
There are a lot of cyclists out coming. They come up from Beijing. And, she asked them, like, oh, man, maybe you should stick with the locals on this sale, or maybe someone with saddlebags or something.
Like, you can take the dog back, yeah.
Yeah, but she kept pushing us to buy it, and it just, like, funny. It was just funny to her. She was just laughing, like, my bumai, bumai.
And then she walked off.
Yeah, so let's get to the main event here. We were going to go to this pagoda place. And now
the Silver Pagoda, which had been closed since 2014.
Yeah, so it's closed for 3 years. We kind of understood there was a gate, and all we have to do is get around that.
We thought we'd sussed out a path round, right, the night before. But the hostel owner said she'd show us, and I assumed she was just gonna walk us up the road and show us the path, but no, she said, jump into my car, and we jumped in and drove to the main gate.
And she kind of said, like, well, you guys aren't allowed to go in there, so I'm going to have to drive you there. so we got to the main gate, and the same guy from last night was there, and this time the two foreigners were inside of a car.
And we were kind of thinking, like, do we need to hide? Do we need to maneuver or whatever? Is he going to spot us? Maybe let's hope he doesn't see us.
Yeah.
But
and he poked his head in the car.
Yeah.
Like, looked at us. And we're the only foreigners for, like, you know, 20 miles. Like, it's the same two people from last night who he denied or tried to. And what did he say? Like, all right, just be quick.
It was like, you can't go in. And she was just like, just open the gate and let me in. I want to go in. He said, okay, come back soon.
Yeah, so they opened the gate. And we drove in. Immediately, she was like, don't listen
just to him. Just ignore him. Don't listen to him.
Yeah.
If he wants me to come back soon, I will. But you guys don't have to.
Yeah, you go and have fun.
So whether or not she purposely misunderstood his come back soon to mean she has to come back soon.
Right. Yeah, the language can be very ambiguous because they don't use a lot of pronouns.
Mm.
And so he never said, like, all three of you must come back soon. But again, it's just the rules aren't really the rules here. So we got in. So now so it was way easier than we thought it would be. We thought it would be easy.
We drove in the main gate.
Yeah, we just went in the gate. All right. Who would have thought of that?
They just opened the gate for us.
Right. And then she dropped us off, wished us have a fun day, and we started walking. And we pretty quickly came upon the main pagoda area. And that was just, like, stunning, just these giant, like, five or six giant pagodas in this big field, just kind of sitting there.
I mean, I think it was originally a Buddhist site in the 600s, and then these pagodas were first built in the Jin Dynasty in the 1100s, and they must have been rebuilt during the Qing Dynasty 100 or so years ago.
Okay, and then they're remodeling somehow now.
Who knows what they're doing?
But it's been closed for 3 years, and we saw, like, three construction workers there.
One of whom shouted at us, said, "Who let you in?" We just ignored him, and then he just ignored us.
Yeah, so that was the extent of the pushback we got from the people inside. You would think that they would get mad because it's supposed to be closed, but nah. They just said something quick and whatever. Back to work.
Whatever, back to work, yeah.
And then there were some monks praying by the pagodas, and we just said a quick hi to them, and they went on, carried on their way, and we read these, looked at these steles, these giant stone blocks with Chinese characters carved into them, and they're quite beautiful. They tell these ancient stories. I don't know what these ones specifically said, but probably said something about the Buddha or something. And just a really nice area, and we were of course the
up
only
in the mountains, up in the forest, just
these emerald hills,
secluded. Yeah,
again, beautiful. Check out the show notes for my photos. I'll put all those up along with the podcast. And then we started seeing these paths that went up. There was a fence, like, also, like, clearly a construction fence, like, do not cross this, and so we just went around that.
We were kind of like, why did they just put up this fence to make life difficult for us? We're still going to get round.
Yeah, come on, guys, you know we're not going to obey this. So we went around that fence, and I don't mean this for us to sound like hooligans or anything. We were still on, like, the paths.
Yeah.
These were well laid out paths that just happened.
Stone paths. Yeah.
Yeah, stone pathways. We weren't just prancing through like daisies or something.
Climbing over barbed wire fences.
No, nothing like that. But there was like this cave with like a Buddhist altar in it, and with a fence blocking it too, like a corrugated tin fence. And Patty pointed out that they put the fence deliberately behind the sign that explained what this cave was. They easily could, like, it would have been actually easier just to put the fence in front of the sign, but then they would have blocked the sign. and the sign said, they explained what the thing was. So it's like, well, for anyone who has broken in to pass the two
barriers. This is closed, but if you're in here, here's a sign for you to read about what this place is, you know.
If you've managed to get this far, we will explain it to you.
They did a pretty good job of making it easy to see the site, even though it was closed.
Right, which makes no sense. But,
you know, the paths were swept. The
totally
the stone paths were very clean. They clearly got someone sweeping the leaves off those.
Oh yeah, it wasn't like overgrown or anything. So they were maintaining it quite well.
For all the people who are not allowed in. AKA us.
For some reason.
For some reason.
So we went up these paths and we quickly figured out that we just wanted to go up as high as we could, and there was this first of all, there was this bell pavilion with these giant bells that were sitting there.
How those must have been carried up, man.
Oh, I know. Yeah, because these were probably, 800 to 1,000 years old. And they must weigh a lot.
Weigh 800 to 1,000 kilos, probably.
Probably, yeah. They might weigh a metric ton. Mm. And then kept going up. The only other illegal tourist we saw was a guy with a drone, which says a lot right there. Those dickheads with drones. He was super nice.
No, he was nice.
And at the very top, we just got this panoramic view of the whole area. Or so we thought. The pollution was starting to come in.
Despite it only being moderate pollution levels.
Yeah, it was
nothing
still
crazy.
Right, it's kind of weird when you're at ground level when the pollution is just kind of moderate. The sky still is blue, and it looks fine. It's puffy white clouds, but then you go up that high, like several hundred feet above the ground level, and it looks
much
severe
easier to
pollution.
See it.
Yeah,
same as when you're coming in on a plane, and you just descend into the soup that is Beijing.
That's right,
because you can see much further along the horizon. You can get a better idea of, it's much more obvious how bad the pollution is.
That's right. So then we just headed back downhill. We thought we'd find a different way out, but we could have maybe done it with a lot of bush bashing.
We were kind of thinking it would be nice not to go back past the guards because we didn't know what they would say as we walked past. So we were trying to find a different route out, right?
Yeah.
But that didn't work. And we ended up just walking past them and they said nothing.
Yeah, they said absolutely not even a word to us.
Not even, they just looked at us and then carried on with what they were doing.
Yeah. So again, no problem at all. So I guess anyone listening to this, it is a really cool place to go check out while it's closed.
Especially whilst it's closed, because I think this is, we figured out perhaps their main motive for closing it is to stop the big tour buses from going in.
Right.
Because those kind of large groups of 30, 40 people can disrupt and vandalize or damage these old things. But if it's a couple of stupid foreigners like us, we're not really going to do much to damage it. So I think they're not too worried about a few individuals, but it's mainly the big tour groups.
Yeah, that's if they are concerned about anything, would make sense of why.
If it was to make any sense at all, that could be part of the sense.
For some reason.
For some reason.
That should be like the theme of this show, for some reason. So then we got on the bikes, and for some reason. We got our bikes again, but the owner of the hotel wasn't there, and we hadn't paid them anything at this point.
We had slept the night, had dinner, had breakfast. They'd driven us into a place that we're not allowed to go, and we still haven't paid a penny.
We're supposed to pay them, well, the equivalent of, I don't know, $14 each, maybe, U.S. dollars. But no. But then eventually, we weren't going to just take off. We would have just left the money on the table or something. But eventually we found the owner and paid him. And he wished us a good day once again. And then we were off. The bike ride home was much quicker than the ride there because it was mostly downhill. And we just stopped once for lunch, for an early lunch. I think the only really funny thing that happened during the lunch was this bottle cap guy. You want to tell that one?
Well, it was a guy sitting next to us. It looked like a good old Beijinger with his belly out and his wife next to him, and they just finished dinner. But they had only got halfway through their drinks, their glass bottles. It was interesting that they wanted to take those home as opposed to finish them. But the guy was searching for a bottle cap to put back on this bottle and found one, stuck it on, And his wife was like, just leave it, just leave it. He's like, no, 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 it's fine. Turn it upside down. And suddenly everything just started coming out all over the table. And he was like, okay, it's clearly not fine. So he took that off, and the owner of the restaurant found him another cup. He put that on. He was like, oh, yeah, that's much better. It's much more fun. Turned it upside down, and the same thing happened all over
just
again.
Sprayed all over. Everyone had a good laugh.
Yeah. That's another great thing. Like, I don't know if that kind of thing was to happen in the UK. I don't know about the US, probably similar. If someone was to do that, they would probably feel embarrassed that they were so stupid, say.
Yeah.
Or so if someone was to start laughing at them, they might get a bit angry or a bit, like, defensive.
Right.
A bit defensive. But here it was just, like, everyone laughing, and he started laughing with us.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's very friendly in that sense.
It's like, look, I wanted to save all of this soda or whatever, and now I've just poured half of it out because of my own stupidity.
Stupid me.
Yeah, and he thought it was funny too.
Yeah, which is a much nicer way to go about it, right? Everyone is just very inclusive, and he knew we were laughing, not really at him, just at the situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So. Just when you're traveling around China, just nonstop funny little things happen, and that was just one of them. I don't know. I'm sure I'm forgetting like 10 things.
Yeah, we must have forgotten most of
them. The one other thing, though, was you were pedaling along, and all of a sudden a chicken ran across the road right in front of you. Just wah, 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 wah.
I was like, okay, I need to look out. As we said, it was busy because there were lots of cyclists. I need to look out for cyclists, and then there were some crazy motorcyclists weaving all over the road, and then there were lorries and buses, and I was like, I've got this down. I know what to look out for. And then this white chicken just screams across the road, and I almost hit it. It would have been our dinner, but yeah.
Yeah. That yeah, I guess, I wonder, do you get to keep a chicken if you hit it?
Probably have to pay for it. You could bargain for it, though.
Yeah, there is a downside. Oh, yeah, even after you killed it.
Yeah.
You still drive the price down. So then we headed back into the city and slowly re-acclimated to civilization, although we'd only been gone like 24 hours.
This is what's great about Beijing is you can get out into these really rural areas where the people are just so, their lives are just so slow and so friendly and so peaceful, and you can be back in the city again in an hour or two. It's just amazing. There's so many places like this.
Right, there are. This is not the only one. There's probably a dozen like really cool weekend getaway spots,
which are all so close
that just bring you to a different world, where it's within a couple hours driving, or what did it take us? Maybe 3 hours to bike out there.
Yeah, just
from
over
the center of the city. Not bad at all. So I totally would recommend this place, and I'll maybe put up some more information for everybody.
Just fresh fruit and veg everywhere, and it's great. Yeah.
Right, that's the other thing. There's no need to even take anything with you, really. Once you get thirsty, you just stop by a drink stand.
There will be somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, there'll be somewhere every 10 minutes or so. And you get hungry, you just stop for some fresh fruit, or there'll be a restaurant every 10
minutes. You don't
even
have to pay for it. You just try a couple of...
If you're Patty, you don't pay for it. If you're a decent human being, you do.
Hey, I'm just Chinese, okay? Just acclimatized.
Yeah, right. You're used to the culture. So then we split up, and Patty just kind of rode his bike the rest of the way straight home, and I did a detour and took my bike to the secret hiding place, we'll say, where Katie and I are going to leave our bikes for 4 months, and I think it'll be a secure location.
It's very secure. We can't mention wherever that would be.
I can't say where Biba is. Oh, crap. So we left him there, and we're going to come pick the bikes up later, and I think, like, I already did an episode about my total failure with the broken chain, and when we first bought these bikes, we actually biked more, I think, than I've ever biked on these bikes total.
Today?
Yeah, just in the last 2 days.
Mm. We cycled, just over 100? It was 50 out and 50 back.
Probably about 100Ks.
Roughly, yeah.
I mean, I you have to cut a little bit of that off for me, but maybe I biked 90Ks, which is, I don't know, 60 miles, so.
Yeah.
It's, the bike's running really well. I just had to put a new chain on that was from the actual bike company, and not just the crappy Chinese
from
chain.
From the street, yeah.
Right. It's working quite well, so I'm excited to do a longer trip. We're going to bike for a couple months around Japan and around Taiwan. That's coming up. So stay tuned for all of that. And anything else you want to add, Patty?
I'm all done. Did you want to finish on what you were saying about your trip past the science?
Oh, yeah. Park? Just, like, I think I had to bike around 10 more kilometers to get to the school. It was further than I thought it would be. But along the way, I passed this gigantic Future Technology Center, it was called in English. And I didn't know about this. It looks like one of these Chinese ghost cities where there's tons of, like, skyscrapers and big buildings with just nobody there. But it doesn't quite look like a ghost city in that you can tell it's going to be lived in very soon. It's all pretty much set to go. And it all looks like really amazing. Hmm. Pretty far out there in the suburbs, but they must be planning some giant thing. Maybe I'll look up, see if I can find it.
Outside of the Fifth Ring Road. So the city is expanding still.
Still, it's greatly expanding.
Yeah.
You can hear a lot of banging right now, but I don't think that's construction. That's probably just someone out on the road.
Probably just someone destroying something.
Probably. There's not all that much construction within the well, no, there is, actually. There's the whole Hutong project, but there's not many
And this
big,
new subway that's going in.
Right. There's not many big, like, office towers going in around here anymore. But
which is nice. They've kept the old city.
Right, a lot of it. Yeah. We're just kind of watching a beautiful sunset right now. This is the best sunset we've had in weeks. You can actually see the mountains in the distance.
Beautiful. Let's close on that, I think.
Sounds good, and I'll be home in about 72 hours, I think. Which is crazy to think about. 3 years of China coming to a close in 3 days.
Safe travels, but China and these strange quirks will be awaiting you.
They will. Stay tuned about 4 months, and we'll be back.
Thanks to Patty Robertson for setting up the bicycle journey and also for coming on the show right afterwards to talk about it. I'm going to put up a lot of pictures of this one on my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number, 1000daysbetween.com. If you go to the show notes for this podcast, you'll see all of my photos. You'll see some more information about those pagodas. Hopefully, we will help one or two of you out there to get to this awesome location because it is so very close to Beijing. Yet sometimes these places can feel so far away. All right, that's all for now. Talk to you next time.